If there is one, we're all in jeopardy. You should return to Trondheim.
And take Aragorn there? Interrupted Brom. They'd tear him apart. It's the worst place he could be right now. Maybe in a few months, or even better, a year. Can you imagine how the dwarfs will react? Everyone will be trying to influence him, especially Islanzadi. He and Saphira won't be safe in Trondheim until I at least get them through to Arthur du Orothrim.
Dwarfs, thought Aragorn excitedly. Where is this Trondheim? And why did he tell Jode about Saphira? He shouldn't have done that without asking me. Still, I have a feeling that they are in need of your power and wisdom.
Wisdom, snorted Brom. I'm just what you said earlier, a crotchety old man.
Many would disagree.
Let them. I've no need to explain myself. No, Ar-Jahad will have to get along without me. What I'm doing now is much more important.
But the prospect of a traitor raises troubling questions. I wonder if that's how the Empire knew where to be.
His voice trailed off.
And I wonder why I haven't been contacted about this, said Jode.
Maybe they tried, but if there's a traitor...
Brom paused. I have to send word to Ar-Jahad. Do you have a messenger you can trust?
I think so, said Jode. It depends on where he would have to go. I don't know, said Brom. I've been isolated so long my contacts have probably died or forgotten me. Could you send him to whoever receives your shipments?
Yes, but it'll be risky.
What isn't these days? How soon can he leave?
He can go in the morning. I'll send him to Gilead. It will be faster, said Jode. What can he take to convince Ar-Jahad the message comes from you?
Here, give your man my ring, and tell him that if he loses it, I'll personally tear his liver out. It was given to me by the Queen.
Aren't you cheery? Commented Jode.
Brom grunted. After a long silence, he said, We'd better go out and join Aragorn. I get worried when he's alone. That boy has an unnatural propensity for being wherever there's trouble.
Are you surprised?
Not really. Aragorn heard chairs being pushed back. He quickly pulled his mind away and opened his eyes.
What's going on? He muttered to himself. Jode and other traders are in trouble for helping people the Empire doesn't favor. Brom found something in Gilead and went to Carver Hall to hide. What could be so important that he would let his own friend think he was dead for nearly 20 years? He mentioned a queen, when there aren't any queens in the known kingdoms, and dwarves who, as he himself told me, disappeared underground long ago.
He wanted answers, but he would not confront Brom now and risk jeopardizing their mission. No. He would wait until they left Tirm, and then he would persist until the old man explained his secrets. Aragorn's thoughts were still whirling when the door opened. "Were the horses all right?" asked Brom.
"Fine," said Aragorn. They untied the horses and left the castle. As they re-entered the main body of Tirm, Brom said,
"So, Jode, you finally got married, and," he winked slyly, "to a lovely young woman. Congratulations."
Jode did not seem happy with the compliment. He hunched his shoulders and stared down at the street. "Whether congratulations are in order is debatable right now. Helen isn't very happy."
"Why, what does she want?" asked Brom.
"The usual," said Jode with a resigned shrug. "A good home, happy children, food on the table, and pleasant company. The problem is that she comes from a wealthy family. Her father has invested heavily in my business. If I keep suffering these losses, there won't be enough money for her to live the way she's used to."
Jode continued,
"But please, my troubles are not your troubles. The host should never bother his guests with his own concerns. While you are in my house, I will let nothing more than an overfull stomach disturb you."
"Thank you," said Brom. "We appreciate the hospitality. Our travels have long been without comforts of any kind. Do you happen to know where we could find an inexpensive shop? All this riding has worn out our clothes."
"Of course, that's my job," said Jode, lighting up. He talked eagerly about prices and stores until his house was in sight. Then he asked, "Would you mind if we went somewhere else to eat? It might be awkward if you came in right now."
"Whatever makes you feel comfortable," said Brom.
Jode looked relieved. "Thanks. Let's leave your horses in my stable." They did as he suggested, then followed him to a large tavern. Unlike the Green Chestnut, this one was loud, clean, and full of boisterous people. When the main course arrived, a stuffed suckling pig, Aragorn eagerly dug into the meat, but he especially savoured the potatoes, carrots, turnips, and sweet apples that accompanied it. It had been a long time since he had eaten much more than wild game. They lingered over the meal for hours as Brom and Jode swapped stories. Aragorn did not mind. He was warm, a lively tune jangled in the background, and there was more than enough food. The spirited tavern babble fell pleasantly on his ears. When they finally exited the tavern, the sun was nearing the horizon. "You two go ahead. I have to check on something," Aragorn said. He wanted to see Saphira and make sure that she was safely hidden. Brom agreed absently.
"Be careful. Don't take too long."
"Wait," said Jode. "Are you going outside of Tiam?" Aragorn hesitated, then reluctantly nodded. "Make sure you're inside the walls before dark. The gates close then, and the guards won't let you back in until morning."
"I won't be late," promised Aragorn.
He turned around and loped down a side street towards Tiam's outer wall. Once out of the city, he breathed deeply, enjoying the fresh air.
"Saphira," he called, "where are you?"
She guided him off the road to the base of a mossy cliff surrounded by maples. He saw her head poke out of the trees on the top and waved.
"How am I supposed to get up there?"
"If you find a clearing, I'll come down and get you."
"No," he said, eyeing the cliff. "That won't be necessary. I'll just climb up."
"It's too dangerous."
"And you worry too much. Let me have some fun."
Aragorn pulled off his gloves and started climbing. He relished the physical challenge. There were plenty of handholds, so the ascent was easy. He was soon high above the trees. Halfway up, he stopped on a ledge to catch his breath. Once his strength returned, he stretched up for the next handhold, but his arm was not long enough. Stymied, he searched for another crevice or ridge to grasp. There was none. He tried backing down, but his legs could not reach his last foothold. Saphira watched with unblinking eyes. He gave up and said,
"I could use some help."
"This is your own fault."
"Yes, I know. Are you going to get me down or not?"
"If I weren't around, you would be in a very bad situation."
Aragorn rolled his eyes.
"You don't have to tell me."
"You're right. After all, how can a mere dragon expect to tell a man like yourself what to do? In fact, everyone should stand in awe of your brilliance of finding the only dead end. Why, if you had started a few feet in either direction, the path to the top would have been clear."
She cocked her head at him, eyes bright.
"All right, I made a mistake. Now can you please get me out of here?"
he pleaded. She pulled her head back from the edge of the cliff. After a moment, he called,
"Saphira?"
Above him were only swaying trees.
"Saphira, come back!" he roared.
With a loud crash, Saphira barreled off the top of the cliff, flipping around in mid-air. She floated down to Aragorn like a huge bat and grabbed his shirt with her claws, scratching his back. He let go of the rocks as she yanked him up in the air. After a brief flight, she set him down gently on the top of the cliff and tugged her claws out of his shirt.
"Foolishness," said Saphira gently.
Aragorn looked away, studying the landscape. The cliff provided a wonderful view of their surroundings, especially the foaming sea, as well as protection against unwelcome eyes. Only birds would see Saphira here. It was an ideal location.
"Is Brom's friend trustworthy?" she asked.
"I don't know."
Aragorn proceeded to recount the day's events.
"There are forces circling us that we aren't aware of. Sometimes I wonder if we can ever understand the true motives of the people around us. They all seem to have secrets."
"It is the way of the world. Ignore all the schemes and trust in the nature of each person. Brom is good. He means us no harm. We don't have to fear his plans."
"I hope so,"
he said, looking down at his hands.
"This finding of the Razak through writing is a strange way of tracking,"
she remarked.
"Would there be a way to use magic to see the records without being inside the room?"
"I'm not sure. You would have to combine the word for seeing with distance, or maybe light and distance. Either way, it seems rather difficult.
I'll ask Brom.
That would be wise.
They lapsed into tranquil silence.
You know, we may have to stay here a while.
Saphira's answer held a hard edge.
And as always, I will be left to wait outside.
That is not how I want it. Soon enough we will travel together again.
May that day come quickly.
Aragorn smiled and hugged her. He noticed then how rapidly the light was fading.
I have to go now, before I'm locked out of Tirm. Hunt tomorrow, and I will see you in the evening.
She spread her wings.
Come, I will take you down.
He got onto her scaly back and held on tightly as she launched off the cliff, glided over the trees, then landed on a knoll. Aragorn thanked her and ran back to Tirm. He came into sight of the portcullis just as it was beginning to lower. Calling for them to wait, he put on a burst of speed and slipped inside seconds before the gateway slammed closed.
"You cut that a little close," observed one of the guards.
"It won't happen again," assured Aragorn, bending over to catch his breath.
He wound his way through the darkened city to Jode's house. A lantern hung outside like a beacon. A plump butler answered his knock and ushered him inside without a word. Tapestries covered the stone walls. Elaborate rugs dotted the polished wood floor, which glowed with the light from three golden candelabra hanging from the ceiling. Smoke drifted through the air and collected above.
"This way, sir. Your friend is in the study."
They passed scores of doorways, until the butler opened one to reveal a study. Books covered the room's walls, but unlike those in Jode's office, these came in every size and shape. A fireplace filled with blazing logs warmed the room. Brom and Jode stood before an oval writing desk, talking amiably. Brom raised his pipe and said in a jovial voice,
"Ah, here you are. We were getting worried about you. How was your walk?"
"I wonder what put him in such a good mood. Why doesn't he just come out and ask how Saphira is? Pleasant, but the guards almost locked me outside the city. And Tirm is big. I had trouble finding this house."
Jode chuckled.
"When you have seen Dras Leona, Gilead, or even Cuasta, you won't be so easily impressed by this small ocean city. I like it here, though. When it's not raining, Tirm is really quite beautiful."
Aragorn turned to Brom.
"Do you have any idea how long we'll be here?"
Brom spread his palms upward.
"That's hard to tell. It depends on whether we can get to the records and how long it will take us to find what we need. We'll have to have help. It will be a huge job. I'll talk with Brand tomorrow and see if he'll let us examine the records."
"I don't think I'll be able to help," Aragorn said, shifting uneasily.
"Why not?" said Brom. "There will be plenty of work for you."
Aragorn lowered his head.
"I can't read."
Brom straightened with disbelief.
"You mean Garrow never taught you?"
"He knew how to read?" asked Aragorn, puzzled.
Jode watched them with interest.
"Of course he did," snorted Brom. "The proud fool, what was he thinking? I should have realized that he wouldn't have taught you. He probably considered it an unnecessary luxury."
Brom scowled and pulled at his beard angrily. "This sets my plans back, but not irreparably. I'll just have to teach you how to read. It won't take long if you put your mind to it." Aragorn winced. Brom's lessons were usually intense and brutally direct.
"How much more can I learn at one time?"
"I suppose it's necessary," he said ruefully.
"You'll enjoy it. There is much you can learn from books and scrolls," said Jode.
He gestured at the walls.
"These books are my friends, my companions. They make me laugh and cry and find meaning in life."
"It sounds intriguing," admitted Aragorn.
"Always the scholar, aren't you?" asked Brom.
Jode shrugged.
"Not any more. I'm afraid I've degenerated into a bibliophile."
"A what?" asked Aragorn.
"One who loves books," explained Jode,
and resumed conversing with Brom. Bored, Aragorn scanned the shelves. An elegant book set with gold studs caught his attention. He pulled it off the shelf and stared at it curiously. It was bound in black leather, carved with mysterious runes. Aragorn ran his fingers over the cover and savored its cool smoothness. The letters inside were printed with a reddish glossy ink. He let the pages slip past his fingers. A column of script set off from the regular lettering caught his eye. The words were long and flowing, full of graceful lines and sharp points. Aragorn took the book to Brom. "What is this?" he asked, pointing to the strange writing. Brom looked at the page closely and raised his eyebrow in surprise.
"Jode, you have expanded your collection. Where did you get this? I haven't seen one in ages."
Jode strained his neck to see the book.
"Ah, yes, the Domia Aber Weirda. A man came through here a few years ago and tried to sell it to a trader down by the wharves. Fortunately, I happened to be there and was able to save the book along with his neck. He didn't have a clue what it was."
"It's odd, Aragorn, that you should pick up this book. The Dominance of Fate," said Brom. "Of all the items in this house, it's probably worth the most. It details a complete history of Alagaesia, starting long before the elves landed here and ending a few decades ago. The book is very rare and is the best of its kind. When it was written, the Empire decried it as blasphemy and burned the author, Heslant the Monk. I didn't think any copies still existed. The lettering you asked about is from the ancient language."
"What does it say?" asked Aragorn.
It took Brom a moment to read the writing. "It's part of an elven poem that tells of the years they fought the dragons. This excerpt describes one of their kings, Serenthor, as he rides into battle. The elves love this poem and tell it regularly, though you need 3 days to do it properly, so that they won't repeat the mistakes of the past. At times they sing it so beautifully it seems the very rocks will cry." Aragorn returned to his chair, holding the book gently.
"It's amazing that a man who is dead can talk to people through these pages. As long as this book survives, his ideas live. I wonder if it contains any information about the Razak."
He browsed through the book while Brom and Jode spoke. Hours passed, and Aragorn began to drowse. Out of pity for his exhaustion, Jode bid them good night.
"The butler will show you to your rooms."
On the way upstairs, the servant said, "If you need assistance, use the bell pull next to the bed." He stopped before a cluster of 3 doors, bowed, then backed away. As Brom entered the room on the right, Aragorn asked,
"Can I talk to you?"
"You just did, but come in anyway."
Aragorn closed the door behind himself.
"Saphira and I had an idea. Is there—"
Brom stopped him with a raised hand and pulled the curtain shut over the window.
"When you talk of such things, you would do well to make sure that no unwelcome ears are present."
"Sorry," said Aragorn, berating himself for the slip. "Anyway, is it possible to conjure up an image of something that you can't see?"
Brom sat on the edge of his bed.
"What you are talking about is called scrying. It is quite possible and extremely helpful in some situations, but it has a major drawback. You can only observe people, places, and things that you've already seen. If you were to scry the Razak, you'd see them, all right, but not their surroundings. There are other problems as well. Let's say that you wanted to view a page in a book, one that you'd already seen. You could only see the page if the book were open to it. If the book were closed when you tried this, the page would appear completely black."
"Why can't you view objects that you haven't seen?" asked Aragorn. Even with those limitations, he realized scrying could be very useful. "I wonder if I could view something leagues away and use magic to affect what was happening there."
"Because," said Brom patiently, "to scry, you have to know what you're looking at and where to direct your power. Even if a stranger was described to you, it would still be nigh impossible to view him, not to mention the ground and whatever else might be around him. You have to know what you're going to scry before you can scry it. Does that answer your question?"
Aragorn thought for a moment.
"But how is it done? Do you conjure up the image in thin air?"
"Not usually," said Brom, shaking his white head. "That takes more energy than projecting it onto a reflective surface like a pool of water or a mirror. Some riders used to travel everywhere they could, trying to see as much as possible. Then, whenever war or some other calamity occurred, they would be able to view events throughout Alagaesia."
"May I try it?" asked Aragorn.
Brom looked at him carefully.
"No, not now. You're tired, and scrying takes lots of strength. I will tell you the words, but you must promise not to attempt it tonight. And I'd rather you wait until we leave Tirm. I have more to teach you."
Aragorn smiled. I promise.
Very well.
Brom bent over and very quietly whispered, Dramor Cooper, into Aragorn's ear. Aragorn took a moment to memorize the words. Maybe after we've left Tirm I can scry Roran. I would like to know how he's doing. I'm afraid that the Razak might go after him.
I don't mean to frighten you, but that's a distinct possibility, said Brom. Although Roran was gone most of the time the Razak were in Carvajal, I'm sure that they asked questions about him. Who knows, they may even have met him while they were in Therensford. Either way, I doubt their curiosity is sated. You're on the loose, after all, and the king is probably threatening them with terrible punishment if you aren't found. If they get frustrated enough, they'll go back and interrogate Roran. It's only a matter of time.
If that's true, then the only way to keep Roran safe is to let the Razak know where I am, so that they'll come after me instead of him.
No, that won't work either. You're not thinking, admonished Brom. If you can't understand your enemies, how can you expect to anticipate them? Even if you exposed your location, the Razak would still chase Roran. Do you know why?
Aragorn straightened and tried to consider every possibility. Well, if I stay in hiding long enough, they might get frustrated and capture Roran to force me to reveal myself. If that didn't work, they'd kill him just to hurt me. Also, if I become a public enemy of the Empire, they might use him as bait to catch me. And if I met with Roran and they found out about it, they would torture him to find out where I was.
Very good. You figured that out quite nicely, said Brom.
But what's the solution? I can't let him be killed. Brom clasped his hands loosely.
The solution is quite obvious. Roran is going to have to learn how to defend himself. That may sound hard-hearted, but as you pointed out, you cannot risk meeting with him. You may not remember this. You were half delirious at the time, but when we left Carvajal, I told you that I had left a warning letter for Roran, so he won't be totally unprepared for danger. If he has any sense at all, when the Razak show up in Carvajal again, he'll take my advice and flee.
I don't like this, said Aragorn unhappily.
Ah, but you forget something.
What? He demanded.
There is some good in all of this.
The king cannot afford to have a rider roaming around that he does not control.
Galbatorix is the only known rider alive besides yourself, but he would like another one under his command.
Before he tries to kill you or Roran, he will offer you the chance to serve him.
Unfortunately, if he ever gets close enough to make that proposition, it will be far too late for you to refuse and still live.
You call that some good?
It's all that's protecting Roran. As long as the king doesn't know which side you've chosen, he won't risk alienating you by harming your cousin. Keep that firmly in mind. The Razak killed Garrow, but I think it was an ill-considered decision on their part. From what I know of Galbatorix, he would not have approved it unless he gained something from it.
And how will I be able to deny the king's wishes when he is threatening me with death? Asked Aragorn sharply.
Brom sighed. He went to his nightstand and dipped his fingers in a basin of rosewater. Galbatorix wants your willing cooperation. Without that, you're worse than useless to him. So the question becomes, if you are ever faced with this choice, are you willing to die for what you believe in? For that is the only way you will deny him. The question hung in the air. Brom finally said, It's a difficult question, and not one you can answer until you're faced with it. Keep in mind that many people have died for their beliefs. It's actually quite common. The real courage is in living and suffering for what you believe.
The Witch and the Weercat.
It was late in the morning when Aragorn awoke. He dressed, washed his face in the basin, and then held the mirror up and brushed his hair into place. Something about his reflection made him stop and look closer. His face had changed since he had run out of Carvajal just a short while ago. Any baby fat was gone now, stripped away by travelling, sparring and training. His cheekbones were more prominent, and the line of his jaw was sharper. There was a slight cast to his eyes that, when he looked closely, gave his face a wild, alien appearance. He held the mirror at arm's length, and his face resumed its normal semblance, but it still did not seem quite his own. A little disturbed, he slung his bow and quiver across his back, then left the room. Before he had reached the end of the hall, the butler caught up with him and said, "Sir, Neil left with my master for the castle earlier. He said that you could do whatever you want today because he will not return until this evening." Aragorn thanked him for the message, then eagerly began exploring Tirm. For hours he wandered the streets, entering every shop that struck his fancy and chatting with various people. Eventually he was forced back to Jode's by his empty stomach and lack of money. When he reached the street where the merchant lived, he stopped at the herbalist's shop next door. It was an unusual place for a store. The other shops were down by the city wall, not crammed between expensive houses. He tried to look in the windows, but they were covered with a thick layer of crawling plants on the interior. Curious, he went inside. At first he saw nothing, because the store was so dark, but then his eyes adjusted to the faint greenish light that filtered through the windows. A colourful bird with wide tail feathers and a sharp, powerful beak looked at Aragorn inquisitively from a cage near the window. The walls were covered with plants. Vines clung to the ceiling, obscuring all but an old chandelier, and on the floor was a large pot with a yellow flower. A collection of mortars, pestles, metal bowls, and a clear crystal ball the size of Aragorn's head rested on a long counter. He walked to the counter, carefully stepping around the complex machines, crates of rocks, piles of scrolls, and other objects he did not recognize. The wall behind the counter was covered with drawers of every size. Some of them were no larger than his smallest finger, while others were big enough for a barrel. There was a foot-wide gap in the shelves far above. A pair of red eyes suddenly flashed from the dark space, and a large, fierce cat leapt onto the counter. It had a lean body with powerful shoulders and oversized paws. A shaggy mane surrounded its angular face. Its ears were tipped with black tufts. White fangs curved down over its jaw. Altogether, it did not look like any cat Aragorn had ever seen. It inspected him with shrewd eyes, then flicked its tail dismissively. On a whim, Aragorn reached out with his mind and touched the cat's consciousness. Gently, he prodded it with his thoughts, trying to make it understand that he was a friend.
"You don't have to do that."
Aragorn looked around in alarm. The cat ignored him and licked a paw.
"Saphira, where are you?"
he asked. No one answered. Puzzled, he leaned against the counter and reached for what looked like a wood rod.
"That wouldn't be wise."
"Stop playing games, Saphira,"
he snapped, then picked up the rod. A shock of electricity exploded through his body and he fell to the floor, writhing. The pain slowly faded, leaving him gasping for air. The cat jumped down and looked at him.
"You aren't very smart for a dragon rider. I did warn you."
"You said that," exclaimed Aragorn.
The cat yawned, then stretched and sauntered across the floor, weaving its way between objects.
"Who else?"
"But you're just a cat," he objected.
The cat yowled and stalked back to him. It jumped on his chest and crouched there, looking down at him with gleaming eyes. Aragorn tried to sit up, but it growled, showing its fangs.
"Do I look like other cats?"
"No."
"Then what makes you think I am one?"
Aragorn started to say something, but the creature dug its claws into his chest.
"Obviously your education has been neglected. I, to correct your mistake, am a weercat. There aren't many of us left, but I think even a farm boy should have heard of us."
"I didn't know you were real," said Aragorn, fascinated. "A weercat." He was indeed fortunate.
They were always flitting around the edges of stories, keeping to themselves and occasionally giving advice. If the legends were true, they had magical powers, lived longer than humans, and usually knew more than they told. The weercat blinked lazily.
"Knowing is independent of being. I did not know you existed before you bumbled in here and ruined my nap. Yet that doesn't mean you weren't real before you woke me."
Aragorn was lost by its reasoning.
"I'm sorry I disturbed you."
"I was getting up anyway,"
it said. It leapt back onto the counter and licked its paw.
"If I were you, I wouldn't hold on to that rod much longer. It's going to shock you again in a few seconds."
He hastily put the rod back where he had found it. What is it?
A common and boring artifact, unlike myself.
But what's it for?
Didn't you find out?
The weercat finished cleaning its paw, stretched once more, then jumped back up to its sleeping place. It sat down, tucked its paws under its breast, and closed its eyes, purring.
Wait, said Aragorn. What's your name?
One of the weercat's slanted eyes cracked open.
I go by many names. If you are looking for my proper one, you will have to seek elsewhere.
The eye closed. Aragorn gave up and turned to leave.
However, you may call me Solumbum.
Thank you, said Aragorn, seriously.
Solumbum's purring grew louder. The door to the shop swung open, letting in a beam of sunlight. Angela entered with a cloth bag full of plants. Her eyes flickered at Solumbum, and she looked startled.
He says you talked with him.
You can talk with him too? Asked Aragorn. She tossed her head.
Of course. But that doesn't mean he'll say anything back.
She set her plants on the counter, then walked behind it and faced him.
He likes you. That's unusual. Most of the time, Solumbum doesn't show himself to customers. In fact, he says that you show some promise, given a few years of work.
Thanks.
It's a compliment coming from him. You're only the third person to come in here who's been able to speak with him. The first was a woman many years ago, the second was a blind beggar, and now you.
But I don't run a store just so I can prattle on. Is there anything you want? Or did you only come in to look?
Just to look, said Aragorn, still thinking about the weercat. Besides, I don't really need any herbs.
That's not all I do, said Angela with a grin. The rich fool lords pay me for love potions and the like.
I never claim that they work, but for some reason they keep coming back.
But I don't think you need those chicaneries.
Would you like your fortune told? I do that too, for all the rich fool ladies.
Aragorn laughed.
No, I'm afraid my fortune is pretty much unreadable, and I don't have any money.
Angela looked at Solumbum curiously.
I think,
she gestured at the crystal ball resting on the counter.
That's only for show, anyway. It doesn't do anything. But I do have.
Wait here. I'll be right back. She hurried into a room at the back of the shop. She came back, breathless, holding a leather pouch which she set on the counter.
I haven't used these for so long, I almost forgot where they were. Now, sit across from me and I'll show you why I went to all this trouble.
Aragorn found a stool and sat. Solumbum's eyes glowed from the gap in the drawers. Angela laid a thick cloth on a counter, then poured a handful of smooth bones, each slightly longer than a finger, onto it. Runes and symbols were inscribed along their sides.
These, she said, touching them gently, are the knuckle bones of a dragon. Don't ask me where I got them. It's a secret I won't reveal. But unlike tea leaves, crystal balls, or even divining cards, these have true power. They do not lie, though understanding what they say is complicated. If you wish, I will cast and read them for you, but understand that to know one's fate can be a terrible thing. You must be sure of your decision.
Aragorn looked at the bones with a feeling of dread.
There lies what was once one of Sephira's kin.
To know one's fate.
How can I make this decision when I don't know what lies in wait for me and whether I will like it? Ignorance is indeed bliss.
Why do you offer this? He asked.
Because of Solumbum. He may have been rude, but the fact that he spoke to you makes you special. He is a weercat, after all. I offered to do this for the other two people who talked with him. Only the woman agreed to it. Selina was her name. Ah, she regretted it, too. Her fortune was bleak and painful. I don't think she believed it, not at first.
Emotion overcame Aragorn, bringing tears to his eyes.
Selina, he whispered to himself. His mother's name. Could it have been her? Was her destiny so horrible that she had to abandon me?
Do you remember anything about her fortune? He asked, feeling sick. Angela shook her head and sighed.
It was so long ago that the details have melted into the rest of my memory, which isn't as good as it used to be. Besides, I'll not tell you what I do remember. That was for her and her alone. It was sad, though. I've never forgotten the look on her face.
Aragorn closed his eyes and struggled to regain control of his emotions.
"Why do you complain about your memory?" he asked, to distract himself. "You're not that old."
Dimples appeared on Angela's cheeks.
"I'm flattered, but don't be deceived. I'm much older than I look. The appearance of youth probably comes from having to eat my own herbs when times are lean."
Smiling, Aragorn took a deep breath.
"If that was my mother, and she could bear to have her fortune told, I can too."
"Cast the bones for me," he said solemnly. Angela's face became grave as she grasped the bones in each hand. Her eyes closed, and her lips moved in a soundless murmur. Then she said powerfully,
"Manin! Weirda! Hugin!"
and tossed the bones onto the cloth. They fell all jumbled together, gleaming in the faint light. The words rang in Aragorn's ears. He recognized them from the ancient language and realized with apprehension that to use them for magic, Angela must be a witch. She had not lied. This was a true fortune-telling. Minutes slowly passed as she studied the bones. Finally, Angela leaned back and heaved a long sigh. She wiped her brow and pulled out a wineskin from under the counter.
"Do you want some?"
she asked. Aragorn shook his head. She shrugged and drank deeply.
"This," she said, wiping her mouth, "is the hardest reading I've ever done. You were right. Your future is nigh impossible to see. I have never known of anyone's fate being so tangled and clouded. I was, however, able to wrestle a few answers from it."
Solemnbum jumped onto the counter and settled there, watching them both. Aragorn clenched his hands as Angela pointed to one of the bones.
"I will start here," she said slowly, "because it is the clearest to understand."
The symbol on the bone was a long horizontal line with a circle resting on it.
"Infinity or long life," said Angela quietly. "This is the first time I have ever seen it come up in someone's future. Most of the time it's the aspen or the elm, both signs that a person will live a normal span of years. Whether this means that you will live forever or that you will only have an extraordinarily long life, I'm not sure. Whatever it foretells, you may be sure that many years lie ahead of you." "No surprises there. I am a rider," thought Aragorn.
Was Angela only going to tell him things he already knew?
"No, the bones grow harder to read, as the rest are in a confused pile."
Angela touched three of them.
"Here the wandering path, lightning bolt, and sailing ship all lie together, a pattern I've never seen, only heard of. The wandering path shows that there are many choices in your future, some of which face you even now. I see great battles raging around you, some of them fought for your sake. I see the mighty powers of this land struggling to control your will and destiny. Countless possible futures await you, all of them filled with blood and conflict. But only one will bring you happiness and peace. Beware of losing your way, for you are only one of the few who are truly free to choose their own fate. That freedom is a gift, but it is also a responsibility more binding than chains."
Then her face grew sad.
"And yet, as if to counteract that, here is the lightning bolt. It is a terrible omen. There is a doom upon you, but of what sort I know not. Part of it lies in a death, one that rapidly approaches and will cause you much grief. But the rest awaits in a great journey. Look closely at this bone. You can see how its end rests on that of the sailing ship. It is impossible to misunderstand. Your fate will be to leave this land forever. Where you will end up, I know not, but you will never again stand in Alagaesia. This is inescapable. It will come to pass even if you try to avoid it."
Her words frightened Aragorn.
"Another death? Who must I lose now?"
His thoughts immediately went to Rohan, then he thought about his homeland.
"What could ever force me to leave? And where would I go? If there are lands across the sea or to the east, only the elves know of them."
Angela rubbed her temples and breathed deeply.
"The next bone is easier to read, and perhaps a bit more pleasant."
Aragorn examined it, and saw a rose blossom inscribed between the horns of a crescent moon. Angela smiled and said, "An epic romance is in your future. Extraordinary, as the moon indicates, for that is the magical symbol, and strong enough to outlast empires. I cannot say if this passion will end happily, but your love is of noble birth and heritage. She is powerful, wise, and beautiful beyond compare." "Of noble birth?" thought Aragorn in surprise. "How could that ever happen? I have no more standing than the poorest of farmers." Now for the last two bones, the tree and the hawthorn root, which cross each other strongly. I wish that this were not so. It can only mean more trouble. But betrayal is clear, and it will come from within your family.
"Roran wouldn't do that," objected Aragorn abruptly.
"I wouldn't know," said Angela carefully. "But the bones have never lied, and that is what they say."
Doubt wormed into Aragorn's mind, but he tried to ignore it. What reason would there ever be for Roran to turn on him?
Angela put a comforting hand on his shoulder and offered him the wineskin again. This time Aragorn accepted the drink, and it made him feel better. "After all that, death might be welcome," he joked nervously.
"Betrayal from Roran? It couldn't happen. It won't."
"It might be," said Angela solemnly, then laughed slightly.
"But you shouldn't fret about what is yet to occur. The only way the future can harm us is by causing worry. I guarantee that you'll feel better once you're out in the sun."
"Perhaps." "Unfortunately," he reflected wryly, "nothing she said will make sense until it has already happened. If it really does," he amended himself.
"You used words of power," he noted quietly.
Angela's eyes flashed.
"What I wouldn't give to see how the rest of your life plays out. You can speak to weircats, know of the ancient language, and have a most interesting future. Also, few young men with empty pockets and rough travelling clothes can expect to be loved by a noble woman. Who are you?"
Aragorn realized that the weircat must not have told Angela that he was a rider. He almost said, "Evan," but then changed his mind and simply stated, "I am Aragorn." Angela arched her eyebrows.
"Is that who you are, or your name?" she asked.
"Both," said Aragorn, with a small smile, thinking of his namesake, the first rider.
"Now I'm all the more interested in seeing how your life will unfold. Who was the ragged man with you yesterday?"
Aragorn decided that one more name couldn't hurt.
"His name is Brom."
A guffaw suddenly burst out of Angela, doubling her over in mirth. She wiped her eyes and took a sip of wine, then fought off another attack of merriment. Finally, gasping for breath, she forced out,
"Oh, that one? I had no idea."
"What is it?" demanded Aragorn.
"No, no, don't be upset," said Angela, hiding a smile. "It's only that, well, he is known by those in my profession. I'm afraid that the poor man's doom, or future, if you will, is something of a joke with us."
"Don't insult him. He's a better man than any you could find," snapped Aragorn.
"Peace, peace," chided Angela with amusement. "I know that. If we meet again at the right time, I'll be sure to tell you about it. But in the meantime, you should—"
She stopped speaking as Solemnbum padded between them. The weircat stared at Aragorn with unblinking eyes.
"Yes?" Aragorn asked, irritated. "Listen closely, and I will tell you two things. When the time comes, and you need a weapon, look under the roots of the Minoa tree. Then, when all seems lost, and your power is insufficient, go to the Rock of Cuthien, and speak your name to open the Vault of Souls."
Before Aragorn could ask what Solemnbum meant, the weircat walked away, waving his tail ever so gracefully. Angela tilted her head, coils of dense hair shadowing her forehead.
"I don't know what he said, and I don't want to know. He spoke to you and only you. Don't tell anyone else."
"I think I have to go," said Aragorn, shaken.
"If you want to," said Angela, smiling again. "You are welcome to stay here as long as you like, especially if you buy some of my goods. But go if you wish. I am sure that we've given you enough to ponder for a while."
"Yes." Aragorn quickly made his way to the door. "Thank you for reading my future.
I think.
You're welcome, said Angela, still smiling. Aragorn exited the shop and stood in the street, squinting until his eyes adjusted to the brightness. It was a few minutes before he could think calmly about what he had learned. He started walking, his steps unconsciously quickening, until he dashed out of Tirm, feet flying as he headed to Saphira's hiding place. He called to her from the base of the cliff. A minute later she soared down and bore him up to the clifftop. When they were both safely on the ground, Aragorn told her about his day.
"And so," he concluded, "I think Brom's right. I always seem to be where there's trouble."
"You should remember what the Weircat told you. It's important."
"How do you know?" he asked curiously.
"I'm not sure, but the names he used feel powerful. Cuthian," she said,
rolling the word around.
"No, we should not forget what he said."
"Do you think I should tell Brom?"
"It's your choice, but think of this. He has no right to know your future. To tell him of Solembum and his words will only raise questions you may not want to answer. And if you decide to only ask him what those words mean, he will want to know where you learned them. Do you think you can lie convincingly to him?"
"No," admitted Aragorn. "Maybe I won't say anything. Still, this might be too important to hide."
They talked until there was nothing more to say. Then they sat together companionably, watching the trees until dusk. Aragorn hurried back to Tirm and was soon knocking on Jode's door.
"Is Neil back?" he asked the butler.
"Yes, sir, I believe he's in the study right now."
"Thank you," said Aragorn.
He strode to the room and peeked inside. Brom was sitting before the fire, smoking.
"How did it go?"
asked Aragorn.
"Bloody awful," growled Brom around his pipe.
"So you talked to Brand?"
"Not that it did any good. This administrator of trade is the worst sort of bureaucrat. He abides by every rule, delights in making his own whenever it can inconvenience someone, and at the same time believes that he's doing good."
"Then he won't let us see the records?" asked Aragorn.
"No," snapped Brom, exasperated. "Nothing I could say would sway him. He even refused bribes, substantial ones too. I didn't think I would ever meet a noble who wasn't corrupt. Now that I have, I find that I prefer them when they're greedy bastards."
He puffed furiously on his pipe and mumbled a steady stream of curses. When he seemed to have calmed, Aragorn said tentatively,
"So, what now?"
"I'm going to take the next week and teach you how to read."
"And after that?" A smile split Brom's face.
"After that, we're going to give Brand a nasty surprise."
Aragorn pestered him for details, but Brom refused to say more. Dinner was held in a sumptuous dining room. Jode sat at one end of the table, a hard-eyed Helen at the other. Brom and Aragorn were seated between them, which Aragorn felt was a dangerous place to be. Empty chairs were on either side of him, but he didn't mind the space. It helped to protect him from the glares of their hostess. The food was served quietly, and Jode and Helen wordlessly began eating. Aragorn followed suit, thinking, "I've had cheerier meals at funerals." And he had, in Carver Hall. He remembered many burials that had been sad, yes, but not unduly so. This was different. He could feel simmering resentment pouring from Helen throughout the dinner.
Of Reading and Plots.
Brom scratched a rune on parchment with charcoal, then showed it to Aragorn.
"This is the letter A," he said. "Learn it."
With that, Aragorn began the task of becoming literate. It was difficult and strange and pushed his intellect to its limits, but he enjoyed it. Without anything else to do, and with a good, if sometimes impatient, teacher, he advanced rapidly. A routine was soon established. Every day Aragorn got up, ate in the kitchen, then went to the study for his lessons, where he labored to memorize the sounds of the letters and the rules of writing. It got so that when he closed his eyes, letters and words danced in his mind. He thought of little else during that time. Before dinner, he and Brom would go behind Jode's house and spar. The servants, along with a small crowd of wide-eyed children, would come and watch. If there was any time afterward, Aragorn would practice magic in his room with the curtains securely closed. His only worry was Saphira. He visited her every evening, but it was not enough time together for either of them. During the day, Sephira spent most of her time leagues away searching for food. She could not hunt near Tirm without arousing suspicion. Aragorn did what he could to help her, but he knew that the only solution for both her hunger and loneliness was to leave the city far behind. Every day, more grim news poured into Tirm. Arriving merchants told of horrific attacks along the coast. There were reports of powerful people disappearing from their houses in the night, and their mangled corpses being discovered in the morning. Aragorn often heard Brom and Jo discussing the events in an undertone, but they always stopped when he came near. The days passed quickly, and soon a week had gone by. Aragorn's skills were rudimentary, but he could now read whole pages without asking Brom's help. He read slowly, but he knew that speed would come with time. Brom encouraged him. "No matter. You'll do fine for what I have planned." It was afternoon when Brom summoned both Jode and Aragorn to the study. Brom gestured at Aragorn. "Now that you can help us, I think it's time to move ahead." "What do you have in mind?" asked Aragorn. A fierce smile danced on Brom's face. Jode groaned. "I know that look. It's what got us into trouble in the first place."
"A slight exaggeration," said Brom, "but not unwarranted. Very well. This is what we'll do."
"We leave tonight or tomorrow," Aragorn told Sephira from within his room.
"This is unexpected. Will you be safe during this venture?"
Aragorn shrugged. "I don't know. We may end up fleeing Tirm with soldiers on our heels." He felt her worry and tried to reassure her.
"It'll be all right. Brom and I can use magic, and we're good fighters."
He lay on the bed and stared at the ceiling. His hands shook slightly, and there was a lump in his throat. As sleep overcame him, he felt a wave of confusion.
"I don't want to leave Tirm," he suddenly realized. "The time I've spent here has been almost normal. What I would give not to keep uprooting myself, to stay here and be like everyone else would be wonderful."
Then another thought raged through him.
"But I'll never be able to while Sephira is around. Never."
Dreams owned his consciousness, twisting and directing it to their whims. At times he quaked with fear. At other times he laughed with pleasure. Then something changed. It was as though his eyes had been opened for the first time, and a dream came to him that was clearer than any before. He saw a young woman, bent over by sorrow, chained in a cold, hard cell. A beam of moonlight shone through a barbed window set high on the wall and fell on her face. A single tear rolled down her cheek, like a liquid diamond. Aragorn rose with a start and found himself crying uncontrollably before sinking back into a fitful sleep.
Thieves in the Castle.
Aragorn woke from his nap to a golden sunset. Red and orange beams of light streamed into the room and fell across the bed. They warmed his back pleasantly, making him reluctant to move. He dozed, but the sunlight crept off him, and he grew cold. The sun sank below the horizon, lighting the sea and sky with color.
"Almost time."
He slung his bow and quiver on his back, but left Zarok in the room. The sword would only slow him, and he was averse to using it. If he had to disable someone, he could use magic or an arrow. He pulled his jerkin over his shirt and laced it securely. He waited nervously in his room until the light faded. Then he entered the hallway and shrugged so the quiver settled comfortably across his back. Brom joined him, carrying his sword and staff. Jode, dressed in a black doublet and hose, was waiting for them outside. From his waist swung an elegant rapier and a leather pouch. Brom eyed the rapier and observed,
"That toad sticker is too thin for any real fighting. What will you do if someone comes after you with a broadsword or a flamberge?"
"Be realistic," said Jode. "None of the guards has a flamberge. Besides, this toad sticker is faster than a broadsword."
Brom shrugged.
"It's your neck."
They walked casually along the street, avoiding watchmen and soldiers. Aragorn was tense, and his heart pounded. As they passed Angela's shop, a flash of movement on the roof caught his attention, but he saw no one. His palm tingled. He looked at the roof again, but it was still empty. Brom led them along Tirm's outer wall. By the time they reached the castle, the sky was black. The sealed walls of the fortress made Aragorn shiver. He would hate to be imprisoned there. Jod silently took the lead and strode up to the gates, trying to look at ease. He pounded on the gate and waited. A small grill slid open and a surly guard peered out.
"Yeah?"
he grunted shortly. Aragorn could smell rum on his breath.
"We need to get in," said Jod.
The guard peered at Jod closer.
"What for?"
"The boy here left something very valuable in my office. We have to retrieve it immediately."
Aragorn hung his head, shamefaced. The guard frowned, clearly impatient to get back to his bottle.
"Ah, whatever," he said, swinging his arm. "Just make sure and give him a good beating for me."
"I'll do that," assured Jod, as the guard unbolted a small door set into the gate.
They entered the keep, then Brom handed the guard a few coins.
"Thank ye," mumbled the man, tottering away.
As soon as he was gone, Aragorn pulled his bow from its tube and strung it. Jod quickly led them into the main part of the castle. They hurried toward their destination, listening carefully for any soldiers on patrol. At the records room, Brom tried the door. It was locked. He put his hand against the door and muttered a word that Aragorn did not recognize. It swung open with a faint click. Brom grabbed a torch from the wall and they darted inside, closing the door quietly. The squat room was filled with wooden racks piled high with scrolls. A barred window was set in the far wall. Jod threaded his way between the racks, running his eyes over the scrolls. He halted at the back of the room.
"Over here," he said. "These are the shipping records for the past 5 years. You can tell the date by the wax seals on the corner."
"So what do we do now?" asked Aragorn, pleased that they had made it so far without being discovered.
"Start at the top and work down," said Jod. "Some scrolls only deal with taxes. You can ignore those. Look for anything that mentions Seether oil."
He took a length of parchment from his pouch and stretched it out on the floor, then set a bottle of ink and a quill pen next to it.
"So we can keep track of whatever we find," he explained.
Brom scooped an armful of scrolls from the top of the rack and piled them on the floor. He sat and unrolled the first one. Aragorn joined him, positioning himself so he could see the door. The tedious work was especially difficult for him, as the cramped script on the scrolls was different from the printing Brom had taught him. By looking only for the names of ships that sailed in the northern areas, they winnowed out many of the scrolls. Even so, they moved down the rack slowly, recording each shipment of Seether oil as they located it. It was quiet outside the room, except for the occasional watchman. Suddenly, Aragorn's neck prickled. He tried to keep working, but the uneasy feeling remained. Irritated, he looked up and jerked with surprise. A small boy crouched on the windowsill. His eyes were slanted, and a sprig of holly was woven into his shaggy black hair.
"Do you need help?"
asked a voice in Aragorn's head. His eyes widened with shock. It sounded like Solumbum.
"Is that you?" he asked incredulously.
"Am I someone else?"
Aragorn gulped and concentrated on his scroll.
"If my eyes don't deceive me, you are."
The boy smiled slightly, revealing pointed teeth.
"What I look like doesn't change who I am. You don't think I'm called a weercat for nothing, do you?"
"What are you doing here?" Aragorn asked.
The weercat tilted his head and considered whether the question was worth an answer.
"That depends on what you are doing here. If you are reading those scrolls for entertainment, then I suppose there isn't any reason for my visit. But if what you are doing is unlawful and you don't want to be discovered, I might be here to warn you that the guard whom you bribed just told his replacement about you, and that this second officer of the Empire has sent soldiers to search for you."
"Thank you for telling me," said Aragorn.
"Told you something, did I? I suppose I did. And I suggest you make use of it."
The boy stood and tossed back his wild hair. Aragorn asked quickly,
"What did you mean last time about the tree and the vault?"
"Exactly what I said."
Aragorn tried to ask more, but the weercat vanished through the window. He announced abruptly,
"There are soldiers looking for us."
"How do you know?" asked Brom sharply.
"I listened in on the guard. His replacement just sent men to search for us. We have to get out of here. They've probably already discovered that Jode's office is empty."
"Are you sure?" asked Jod.
"Yes,"
said Aragorn impatiently. They're on their way! Brom snatched another scroll from the rack.
No matter, we have to finish this now.
They worked furiously for the next minute, scanning the records as fast as they could. As the last scroll was finished,